Well, it is election day, and I want to encourage you, your vote makes a difference. This is not something we sit out. I'll tell you why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, this is not a conservative political talk show. It is a Bible-based talk show. And because it is Bible-based, we are talking about Election Day. Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I have no problem stirring up controversy today. I have no problem avoiding controversy. My goal is to be constructive and edifying. There are Christians who are so cynical of the whole election process. There are Christians who are so cynical about the political system. There are Christians who have such a heavenly mentality in terms of we're just passing through, we're citizens of heaven, we're not citizens of any country. For one reason or another, there are many believers who will not vote, who will stay back and sit the vote out, or who will just say, look, I don't have a candidate that represents me either way, or I can't vote for a party. I want to urge you to reconsider that, and I want to urge you to take the opportunity that you have and to use the privilege that you have as an American citizen to make a difference in the direction of this country. Now, just a question for you, and again, I have no problem with controversial opinions being aired today. I have a question for you. For all those who are voting or who have voted, what determines who you vote for? What determines your vote? Based on what criteria do you vote? And I'm speaking in particular to those who say we're followers of Jesus, we believe the Bible is God's word. Who do you vote for? Based on what? Is it just the tradition? We always vote this way? Is this the way my family's always voted? This way my church friends vote? I hope that's not the case, because that's pretty shallow. Is it just, well, I saw a powerful ad on TV and that really got me thinking? Well, did it get you thinking enough to look into the issues and find out what was right, what was wrong? Where I live, let's say I'm just relaxing one night watching some sports in between writing or something like that, and I'll see one ad come on for the Republican candidate, and then that ends, and now the ad comes on for the Democratic candidate. Boom. And then next break, it's in reverse order. I went on YouTube often looking for videos on YouTube and things like that. I went on YouTube the other day, and there's an ad that starts playing before the video comes up, and it's for the Republican candidate. And then seconds later, next video, it's for the Democratic. I don't know how much money they're putting into all this, but each ad is trying to persuade you and convince you of things and do it in a way that you don't even research and just, yeah, I'm going to do this. Why do you vote for the one you vote for? Can anyone, I'm asking an honest question here, can anyone give me any justification for voting for a pro-abortion candidate? Can any of you give me any justification for voting for a pro-abortion candidate? If this person was going to be strong in economy, if this person was going to be strong on immigration issues, but they were pro-abortion, could you vote for that person in good conscience? What if they were excellent on the economy? They were excellent on the economy and they were excellent on immigration, but they said, we have no problem redefining marriage. Could you vote for that person? What if they were excellent on the economy, excellent on immigration, but were strongly anti-Israel in terms of the importance of America standing with Israel? Could you vote for that person? Before President Obama was elected, I warned you, our listeners, that unless he changed form, that he would be the most radically pro-abortion, pro-gay activist president in our history. Sadly, that has proven true. It's got nothing to do with race, got nothing to do with party. That's just his position. Tragically, that's true. I could not under any circumstances justify voting for him. You could argue about voting for a Republican candidate as an alternative, but lots to talk about. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to speak to you about the importance of voting. And there are issues for me that are non-negotiables. So when I look to vote for a candidate, it's possible that I won't vote for anyone in a particular slot because I can't support either. But I cannot, in conscience before God, vote for a candidate that is pro-abortion. Just as if I had lived in the days of slavery, I could not have voted for a candidate who was pro-slavery. I cannot, in conscience before God, vote for a candidate who is pro-abortion. It doesn't matter how strong the candidate may be on other issues. To me, I would share in having blood on my hands in doing so. I would be complicit in taking the life of the unborn. You say, yeah, but look, that one person, how much can they do either way, for good or for bad? That's not the issue. It is going to vote and saying, I stand with this person on this particular issue. Let me say again, I do not have confidence in either party, even though because of the main issues for me that I look at in terms of voting, in terms of family morality and life and standing with Israel, just there are other issues as well, but those are issues that are critically important to me. You can blast me for it and say that's small-minded, fine. Those are critically important to me. I would have been a one-issue voter in the days of slavery. Maybe I couldn't vote for either candidate, but I certainly couldn't vote for a pro-slavery candidate. It is the same to me with these particular issues. So when I vote, though, I have voted primarily Republican for some time now because of the fact that on the key issues I stand for, there are Republican candidates who stand for those, at least ostensibly, some not as strongly as I desire, and sometimes I haven't voted at all or voted with reluctance for one of those candidates. The Democrats, on these key issues, their platform has been totally against us on the abortion issue, totally against us on the marriage and family issue, and very weak when it comes to Israel. However, I do not have confidence in either party, the Democrats because of where they stand, plus the Democrat establishment, and the Republicans because of the establishment. And I, for one, think that term limits make a whole lot of sense that can break some of the grip of the good old boys. And some have been in office for a long time that deserve being in office, but still, I question. Well, I was forwarded an email sent out by Scarlett Johansson for the Democratic Party. Now, some of my friends in Israel commended her recently when she stood by an ad that she did for an Israeli soda company. That's factory is based in the so-called occupied territories, and the Palestinian and Israeli workers get along well and have good relationships, and the Palestinian workers are paid better by this company than they'd be by other companies. So some friends commended Scarlett Johansson for standing firm there. Unfortunately, she is obviously standing with Democrats in terms of, quote, women's rights. And she sent this out, friend, I think you know by now how incredibly high the stakes are on November 4th, especially for women. And if we don't want to wake up on November 5th and find ourselves on the fast track back in time on women's rights, it's critical that Democrats vote. So she's urging people to make sure they know where they're voting and then forward the email to three friends, obviously women friends in particular, telling them you better vote or you're going to lose your rights. In particular, what rights? How about the, quote, right to abortion? If the Republicans take back the Senate, one of the first things they will try to dismantle will be a woman's right to make her own personal health care decisions, like killing the baby in the womb. That's a personal health care decision. She says, this year I've been appalled again and again by decisions from the GOP and even the Supreme Court that attack a woman's right to choose, and this is our chance to take action. The Supreme Court did not attack a woman's right to choose. They exempted an employer for having to contribute to abortion. That's what they did. They did not take away a woman's, quote, right to choose. Our votes on Tuesday are all that can stop Republicans from doing even more damage. So this is the mentality, and this is what Democrats are calling for, so you know where your vote goes. 866-34-TRUTH. Are there factors for you that are non-negotiable. How do you determine who you vote for? Now, look, I'm putting things on the table plainly. Those of you who've been listening to me long enough know my heart, know that I'm not an Obama basher, know a trillion times more than that, that there's not a race issue that I have with anybody. My issue is issues, all right? And I've made very plain my solidarity with the Black church and the African-American community enough just by my life. I don't need to talk about that. So these are not race issues to me. If you want to make it into a race issue, feel free. But it's not a race issue to me. It may be to you. You may be white, Black, Hispanic, Asian, Jew, whoever. But these are, none of these are race issues to me. When I vote for a candidate, do I have a leaning either way based on the color of their skin? Only that I really wanted to vote for our first Black American president, but I couldn't. Yeah, I was wanting to vote for a Black candidate for president, but I couldn't. So I'm being totally candid with you. I couldn't the first time, all the more I couldn't the second time. But I know that when we talk politics, it gets volatile. To me, it's not, this is not political issues. These are righteousness issues. These are moral issues. These are economic issues. These are societal issues. Look, immigration is a really thorny, difficult, massive problem. And for some of you, that's your one issue. Some of you say, look, the economy affects everybody, and the poor are always hurt more than anybody, so that's our issue. Others say, look, Mike, you can talk about abortion, you can talk about these other things, but national defense, if we don't have a strong national defense, we could be slaughtered. I understand. I'm not minimizing anyone else's concerns, okay? I'm simply speaking from my heart and telling you my views. Last thing, and then I'm going to the phones. I don't think when I voted before that I ever went through a list of justices, Supreme Court justices, appeals court justices in my state. I don't think I have ever gone through a list, read about the candidates, and then voted. As far as I can remember, I've never done that before. But God willing, I'm able to get there in time. As soon as radio's over, then I head over to a voting place and I've got to teach after. That's the only time constraint. But I've got a list with me of candidates that stand for the values that I stand for judgeships. And this will be the first time I specifically vote, because we've seen now what activist judges do. We've seen now what activist judges do and how they can overturn the will of the people of a state. And they can read things into the Constitution that no one's ever seen before. And they can make ridiculous statements that are unsupportable. So I'm voting carefully now for judges. I've never done that. I'm sorry to say I've never done that. But that's a fact. I'm confessing to it. 866-34-TRUTH. What are the values most important to you? And can any of you justify? Can any of you justify voting for a pro-abortion candidate? All right, to the phones. Bill in Washington, D.C., you're first up on the line of fire today. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to your comments, and I happen to agree. My problem isn't so much voting on one issue, because I think you have to have a principled vote, and if it's one issue or five, you know, pick one and then choose a side. My challenge is that, you know, maybe as a conservative, that conservatives don't get out of conservative candidates, or I should say Republican candidates, what we would expect. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. You know, we've been talking about abortion, we've been talking about gay marriage, but where have the Republicans actually been on opposing these issues and really standing up to the point where these become central issues when they vote on legislation in the House or Senate? Are they willing to stop legislation from moving, even when it means they become unpopular? I'll give an example on the other side, because Tavis Smiley just talked about this on Face the Nation, about how Democrats, and I'm a Black man, how Democrats take advantage of the Black community by making sure that they bring out the race card whenever they're in trouble and they need us to come to the rescue.
Yep.
Versus other times they never want to hear from the Black community. I'm just asking a question of conservatives as well as liberals. You know, if you're going to take a stand on an issue, make sure your side is actually delivering on it.
Yes, sir.
Versus they only come to you when they need you.
Yeah, and I'm only jumping in because I've got a break. You're absolutely right. Pastor Patrick Wooten in, is it Raleigh, North Carolina? Black pastor with a tremendous voice in the community. He said black voters are just taken for granted. It's assumed they're going to vote Democrat. You just do something to get them in and then don't really sit and meet and find out what the issues are. And then certainly the Republican Party can do the same with white evangelicals. Campaign a certain way to get the vote. President Obama, I would say, has been true to form. To me, for the worst, but he's been true to form and having a certain very liberal agenda that he's been advancing. The only credit I give to the Republicans is this, sir, that there have been bills, ENDA and different things, that Republicans have stood against in a principled way that have thwarted some activism and some pro-life measures. But have they lived up to the expectations? No, sir. Many have not.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
They're handing out pamphlets saying, look, the Republicans are targeting President Obama because he's black. You're black. You've got to go out and support him.
That was the voice of Ben Stein. Listen, to me, none of this has anything to do with race. George Bush was severely criticized. G.W. Bush, severely criticized. There were people saying lynch Bush. There was one well-known American intellectual saying that he wanted to see Bush dead. It had nothing to do with him being white. President Obama's hated, reviled. Nothing to do with being black. Now, I'm sure there are people that are racist. I'm sure that there are people who are racist on every side. But listen, when President Obama was elected, it was landmark for race issues, but to me, it was not a mandate on how he did. In other words, if his failures, his anti-God policies, from my viewpoint, do not indict race. They've got nothing to do with race. It has to do with him and his extreme liberalism and his wrong perspective. So I really wanted to rejoice at the historic landmark of what happened in our country and the positive message it sent out in our country, but I couldn't because I knew what his policies would be, although I've prayed that God would get hold of him and raise him up in righteousness. But if right now people are running from him and Democrats are running from him and people say this vote will be a statement about the president, in many ways that's true. But it's nothing to do with race. Whatever failures he's had have nothing to do with race. You say, well, what if he succeeded? It still wouldn't have to do with race, but it would have brought more pride. It would have brought more pride to people. So I'm all for rejoicing in the positive and not blaming for the negative. But we make a big mistake when we get wrought up over the wrong issues. And let's vote based on righteousness. Let's vote based on the way that we could look in God's eyes and say, I cast a vote that was right in your sight. Often it's difficult. Look, I voted for Mitt Romney with tremendous reluctance, not so much because he was a Mormon, really that was minor to me, but because I didn't trust the depth of his conservative moral values. And I wrote an article to come out the day of the election saying that if he was elected, don't put your trust in Romney and the Republican Party. So that's the level of reluctance I had. And there are times I just can't vote for either candidate and have to vote for other candidates on the ballot. Anyway, I'm just giving you my opinion, my thoughts. Let's go to the phones. Anita in, all right, let's go to Giselle in, whoa. What is happening to our callers? John in Newark, New Jersey, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
All right. Yeah, I'm a Christian, and one of the concerns I have is forcing our beliefs onto those in society that don't believe as we believe. You know, drafting mm-hmm. these laws against abortion. I think when we draft these laws onto that force people to believe as we believe, we might be making enemies of the cross instead of disciples of Christ. I think we should focus most of our energy on focusing most of our energy on discipling and knocking on doors and spreading love, spreading the gospel. Mm-hmm. Because a lot
can we do that? I mean, that's what I try to share the gospel all the other time. But can I vote once a year?
Yeah, we can vote, but we also have to be careful. Just like with homosexuality, the gay and lesbian population. Unfortunately, you know, they consider us our enemies.
Yeah.
Because of some of the stances that we've taken,
yeah.
As opposed to the love that we should be showing them.
Let me ask this: should we have any laws? I mean, we're adulterers, aren't happy with us because we preach against sin. We don't have a law against adultery, but say during slave trade, we don't want to alienate the slave traders, so maybe we shouldn't have.
But there's different types of laws. These laws that we're talking about, divisive laws. We can all agree.
Slavery brought a civil war, sir. Slavery brought a civil war. Polygamy is a divisive law. There are many that want to be polygamists because of their faith. You know, Muslims and Mormons. That's divisive. There are other laws. You know, laws against incest. That's divisive to people. There are others that want the age of consent lowered. That's divisive. Restrictions on drinking. You have to be 21. Laws against drugs. That's divisive. So,
exactly. But we're ultimately talking about winning souls for Christ.
It's okay to slaughter babies in the womb and not try to save their lives in order to win someone to the Lord. So we'll sacrifice over 50 million babies slaughtered because that's going to help us to win someone who has an abortion?
Well, we have to remember what's going on today also happened in Jesus' day. They slaughtered babies in Jesus' day. He didn't lose focus on his mission.
And who's losing focus? He taught about children. He said, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. He called us to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. He called us to excel in good deeds. But
He didn't appeal to Caesar to stop abortion, stop killing a baby. He spread the gospel.
John, it's not either or, sir. What you're talking about is the destruction of society and social anarchy. It's not either or. So look, there are, if I love someone, okay, I'm going to tell them the truth. Now, here's the other thing. No one knows how you vote, John. No one knows who's responsible for what vote. But you want me now to vote for a pro-abortion candidate and have blood on my hands so that I can win my neighbor to Jesus, who otherwise is going to be offended by my stand on abortion? You think that's going to help advance the gospel?
I'm not saying that we should vote pro-abortion, but what I am saying is that we should vote more love. And I think what happens...
Love for who?
We should be more concerned about...
Okay, do you love the baby in the womb? John, do you love the baby in the womb? John, do you love the baby in the womb? As it's being cut in pieces, as it's being killed in barbaric, horrific ways, do you love that baby in the womb? When that baby sits before you in the world to come as an adult and says, what were you doing when I was being slaughtered? What is love going to tell that baby?
Okay, well, love is, our first and foremost mission is to spread the gospel. And I think that covers the most.
To make disciples.
That's in and of itself. So we can make a disciple of someone that's actually debating about whether to terminate their child.
John, listen, I got a break coming up. I'm sorry. But John, I'm more involved in world missions than probably anybody you know, sharing the gospel constantly, raising up, sending up people who are literally giving their lives to reach the lost. And I'm standing for life. You can do both, sir. Don't deceive yourself. We're called to make disciples. How do disciples live? Friends, on that note, and stay right there on the phones, but on that note, I want to encourage you to go to my website right now, askdrbrown.org, or call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. We have a really important package we've put together. My debate with Harry Knox, a gay activist who says he's a born-again Christian, but can you be gay and Christian? It is such an eye-opener from beginning to end, 2 hours. When you get it, we're giving you a free copy of A Stealth Agenda, which is a mini version of A Queer Thing Happened to America. The book is free. Supplies are limited.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And sometimes someone, usually mom, leaves the workplace to stay home with the kids, which then leaves her earning a lower wage for the rest of her life as a result. And that's not a choice we want Americans to make.
Now, the president has been accused of speaking against stay-at-home moms. The larger context, the claim is, no, that he was not saying that at all. He was speaking of different situations, was not speaking against stay-at-home moms. But that clip has been broadcast and put out there. So, again, there is debate. Many say, no, that was not his point. 866-34-TRUTH. Those would be of those who are defending him. John in Sterling, Virginia, welcome to the line of fire.
Hey, John.
You're John. I'm Mike.
Sorry. Yeah. Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Anyways, as a Christian, very brief, you mentioned something about the having the righteous mind. I just don't understand how some Christians, which I go, what you said, you would not vote for someone who is with abortion. But having the righteous mind, would you vote for someone who's supporting homosexuality or stuff like that, that you know it goes against God's laws?
No, I can't.
Yeah, I'm
can't
sorry?
Do it. My three non-negotiables are pro-life, pro-marriage, and also pro-Israel. So for
what
me,
about
if it
righteous towards God's view, how would God view us? If he views us that we're supporting that candidate that's running for president knowing that he's supporting homosexuality, and it's our vote that will help him win regardless.
Exactly. That's why I couldn't vote for him. That's why that's one of my three. That's why I said pro-marriage. So anyone that wants to redefine marriage or support same-sex so-called marriage, under no circumstances could I vote for them for that very reason. Totally with you on that, sir. Absolutely. Let's go to Nancy in... I was going to Manhattan. All right, we've reconnected with Giselle in Manhattan. Welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. So the abortion issue, if I were to vote and I've never voted, that would be something that I would look into. You know, I wouldn't vote for anybody to be able to get abortions. That being said, unfortunately, I've been through it. And
yeah.
I could sit here and talk to you about it. You, without tears coming out, because I know that God forgave me, but you still, it hurts because you took a life.
Yeah.
So so I would just, I guess, want to, and this is maybe off topic, but I would educate these girls that are having to go through these things.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes the person who whatever happened with, they'll be like, you know, don't keep the baby, like... And that's
right,
not
they don't get other counsel. They're not told about the lasting effects
right.
and the guilt they'll deal with. And because
exactly.
many don't come to know the Lord and they don't find that forgiveness, sometimes it makes it harder for them to have children in the future.
Stuff going on in the house, like the Bible teaching the kids, like, you know, don't hang out with these people, basically, you know, whatever happens, because it's a life. You know, and I do have a daughter, and that's the thing. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I do have one daughter. And it's like,
thank
you know,
God.
She's like, She's like, I wish I had a brother or sister. You know, it kills you, you know, but God forgave me, but it's just something horrible to go through. So I think
that's why pregnancy crisis centers are so important, because a woman can go there, she can get an ultrasound. She can see what she's dealing with in living form.
And you talk to her and you're like, look, if you don't want to keep the child, you know, and then you give them like other options besides.
Yeah, adoption is a real option, and people are on waiting lists for that very reason.
Absolutely.
Thank God for His mercy. Hey, Giselle, I've got a break, but if you're legally able to vote, I encourage you to do it. Take advantage of the opportunity that you have. You're going to be right back with a fascinating interview. Stay right there.
It's the line of of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to continue to talk about Election Day and voting, but I want to change subjects for a moment. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Last week, there was a lot of news regarding major events among the Southern Baptist Convention, major discussion among their ethics committee, and a focused conference was held having to do with homosexuality. And there was discussion last week about comments made by Russell Moore, who is a well-known Southern Baptist leader, about sexual orientation, about, quote, reparative therapy, about homosexuality. Some say the quotes were taken out of context or misunderstood, but it comes back to the question of following Jesus and what does he require of us as his disciples, and is there such a thing as, quote, gay Christian? There's a young man, Matt Moore, who has been blogging on these issues for some time now because they are his own story. They have to do with his own life, and I thought it would be good to talk with Matt firsthand about these things. Matt, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Matt, you recently said that you would not call yourself a gay Christian. I really agreed with what you wrote, but could you share that with our listeners, why that's not a label that you want to take on for yourself?
Firstly, I know that I have brothers and sisters in Christ, and a few of whom I'm connected with online who do refer to themselves as gay Christians, and they are living out a faithful celibate lifestyle. Mm-hmm. They aren't engaging in homosexual behavior or in a dating relationship, but they still hold on to this word gay as described as part of their identity. I have issue with that, not just because I'm Southern Baptist and I'm brainwashed to think a certain way, as many people accuse me of. But because for me, and I think for 99.999% of people in our culture, the word gay sets over and describes a lifestyle, or not even only a lifestyle, but desires that are sinful in God's eyes and that are twistings and perversions of good, natural sexual desire. And so I can't with a good conscience describe myself as, although I do still struggle with the temptation to sin, I can't proudly label myself with a word describing those temptations to sin and then put it alongside the word describing my allegiance to Christ, and call myself a gay Christian.
Yeah. And that's very well articulated, Matt. The question is, who are you? What is your identity? And what you're saying is that you choose not to identify as gay or to broadcast that any more than I would say that I am a fallen, sinful human being now redeemed in Jesus. And that's that whole thing is part of my constant identity that I'm a fallen, sinful human being. I was an unredeemed person. By God's grace, I'm redeemed. And whatever desires or temptations or issues I have, no matter how deep they are, they don't define me. So you feel then there's a problem that arises if you put that in the definition of who you are, and it really sends a wrong impression and even speaks a wrong thing to you personally?
Yeah, it speaks a wrong thing to me personally, but I think it also communicates just confusion to people that are outside the church. I think a problem is that inside the church, we have adopted the idea that the culture holds that having a gay, what they call sexual orientation, has been removed from, and I'm talking about the Christian perspective, has kind of been removed from the category of sinful or perverted or twisted, and then placed into, right alongside a heterosexual orientation. Where it's morally neutral and there's nothing wrong with it. And so I don't want to communicate to unbelievers and to people outside of the church that I am okay with experiencing same-sex desires. I don't want to communicate that I accept that as something that is good and a part of who I am. Like, yes, I do experience that, but it's an experience that I hate. You know, and I feel like that's all Christians. We all experience temptations to sin that mm-hmm. we hate. You know, we don't settle into them and identify ourselves by them.
Right. If I, as a heterosexual, had desires for a woman I wasn't married to or looked lustfully at someone, that's not wholesome because it's heterosexual. That's unclean. And to the extent right. that any of that is in my nature, it's simply unclean. The fact that I can have a healthy relationship with my wife does not make that any less unclean or any less a part of me that is unclean. Matt, before you were following Jesus, did you think that you were born gay? Was that part of your mentality?
Yes, it was. I mean, I experienced a pull romantically and sexually towards the same gender since I was 10, 11 years old. So the fact that I couldn't remember a time when I wasn't attracted to the same gender, in my mind, equated being born that way.
So how do you view it now?
I believe that I was born a broken sinner in Adam, just like the rest of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why my brokenness and my sinfulness fleshed out in such a way that I experienced homosexual attractions. It's probably a combination of, I know for a fact it's a combination of the sin in me and sins that happen against me. But I don't believe that God, like there was an article by a pastor that went viral a few weeks ago talking about how he would treat his gay kids, and he was affirming it. And saying, you know, God knit them in their mother's womb like that, where I would completely disagree. Like, sin knitted homosexual desires into me, not God.
Yeah, and if God knitted those desires, then what about all the other wrong and unclean, sinful desires that human beings have? Or are we going to say that God knit those into us? God forbid. Matt, I'm sure you've heard this a lot, though. Look, it's just not fair. An 18-year-old heterosexual gets saved, let's say a young man, a young woman, and maybe they're into drugs, or maybe they're into drinking, or maybe they're into other sinful lifestyles, but hey, they can get married, they can still be heterosexual, and that's fine. But it's not fair to tell someone, well, either you have to change and be attracted to the opposite sex, or forever be celibate. How do you respond to that as someone right now who is living a celibate life in the Lord?
I do understand that there is a difference in somebody who is mainly attracted to the same sex following Christ, as opposed to somebody who is mainly attracted to the opposite sex. The first thing that I would say is, you know, stop trying to be like Miss Cleo and forecast your future, you know, and then say, well, there's no way that the Lord is ever going to change my desires in such a way that I would find somebody of the opposite sex attracted and love them and want to be committed to them in marriage. Don't rule out that possibility. You know, I think mm-hmm. that we have heightened, you know, and raised up this idea in our minds of sexual orientation and that being a fixed thing, where I don't believe that that's biblical.
Yep.
And so I wouldn't rule out all hope for that happening. But at the same time, if you do spend your life celibate and single and following Christ, like, it is going to be far more fulfilling than it would be being in a partnership separated from Christ. I've been celibate for the past 4 years, which I know is nothing in comparison to many men and women like me. But the past 4 years have been far more joyful, and I've had just deep peace, and it's been increasing over the past 4 years than I ever had before.
And Matt, what blesses me in terms of the things that I've read is you're not trying to trick anybody. You're not trying to say that certain desires can't be there or you can't be tempted. Now, I know folks that have been radically changed by the power of the gospel or counsel, I know others that haven't been changed, but they, like you, are saying Jesus is more than enough. Do you get a lot of hate coming towards you because of the stands you take?
Yes, on a daily basis.
Why do you think that is? Because you're just saying, hey, I'm following Jesus and I'm seeking to live a holy life that's right before him. You're not bashing others. You're gentle in your differences with others who say they're, quote, gay Christians. Why do you think the hatred comes your way?
Well, I think that most people hold the thoughts that, you know, in order to live a completely filling and joyful and happy and fulfilling life, you need to express yourself sexually in the way that you want to. And basically, the message that I'm proclaiming, which is just the gospel, is that you don't have the right to express yourself according to your sinful desires. Like, you're not your own. Like, you were created you're purchased with Christ, and you know, we're to follow him and to believe that his ways are best and that his boundaries are set in place, not to restrict us, but to, for us to flourish and for our good. So I think that, you know, the gospel message basically to all people across all different spheres, whether it's sexuality or other stuff, calls us to repentance. It calls us to dying to ourselves and to denying ourselves. And I believe that people think that I'm calling people into a life of misery and death and begrudging denial, but really it's a denial that leads to life and to joy.
Yeah, exactly. So well said, Matt. What's your website?
It's moremat.org, my last name and my first name, .org.
All right, got it. What we'll do, we'll put this interview up, and then we'll blast that out on social media. God bless you, man. I'm with you step for step. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Boy, what a blessing to talk to Matt Moore just in his mid-20s, clear-headed, biblically based, serious about Jesus. What a joy to speak with him. And if you missed his website for social media and things like that, we will be putting that up on Facebook. We'll, as long as the video came out, we will be taking the video with obviously the audio content, of course, and putting it up on YouTube. You'll see me. You won't get to see Michael on the video except for his face. But we'll put that up, and then we'll give you the social media info as well. I want to play a few audio clips for you in one moment, but let me go back to the phones just to finish up this discussion about voting. Michael in Wayne, New Jersey, thanks for holding. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's great to be on. God bless you, brother. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Anyway, I want to go back to the political conversations you had before you had your last guest. May I do that?
Please.
Okay, first of all, I want to tell you something, and this is a deep burden on my heart, that it is absolutely no use to cast a vote. And I'll back up my claim very much. First of all, we have a man who was a grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, a 33-degree Freemason, and he was also an Illuminati. His name was Albert Pike. And in 1871, he wrote a letter to a fellow Illuminati named Mazzini. It's August 15th, 1871. This is what the letter said. It's documented. You can look it up yourself. I give you, you know, brief references if you like. This is what he wrote in the letter. In 1871, the First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the Tsars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of atheist communism. The divergences caused by the agents of the Illuminati between the British and German Empire
Hang on, just real quick question, just for time's sake. So you're saying it makes no, there's no reason for us to vote because the Illuminati are controlling everything.
Sir, I know it sounds like a conspiracy theory, sir, but think about it. It's by ridicule that things are not investigated. Obama was sent to court to prove his residency in the United States, being a citizen in the United States and by birth. And guess what? He didn't have to prove it. Even though his own people said that they have proof that this is an illegitimate birth certificate.
Right.
Guess what?
Ridicule. So tell you what. Let's do this, okay?
Yes,
let's put your thesis out, and folks want to investigate it. They can investigate it. Fair enough. So I'll not ridicule it. I'll simply say Michael is suggesting there is no reason for us to vote because the Illuminati control the world, and you can even see this predicted in an 1871 letter. All right. We'll just share it with our discerning listeners. Thank you, sir, for the call. Let me go back to the subject of Russell Moore at the Southern Baptist conference, this ethics conference on the gospel, homosexuality, and the future of marriage. This is interaction that Russell Moore has as he's being asked a question by an interviewer. Joey, clip number one.
One of the major things that's happened in the past 2 years as it relates to Christian ministry in this area has been the collapse of the ministry Exodus International. That was the largest ministry to those wrestling with same-sex attraction. And there was a lot of controversy, not just with that, but more broadly about the subject of reparative therapy. So can you help us understand what reparative therapy is and how we should think about how that fits into ministry in this area?
All right. Now, that was the question to Russell Moore. What I want to make clear is the collapse of Exodus has nothing to do with the ability of God to change people. And it has nothing to do with the success or failure of, quote, reparative therapy. In fact, Exodus did not even focus primarily on, quote, reparative therapy. The collapse of Exodus had to do with embracing a hyper-grace message and by claiming that people really didn't change based on selective testimonies, because there are many others who have been changed radically who are saying, what are you talking about? Nobody changes. And you're preaching an exaggerated grace message that is destructive and hurting people. I know these things for facts. I know people involved. I even got directly involved in dealing with certain issues with certain individuals and, of course, wrote my hyper-grace book that addresses some of these abuses, which hurt Exodus as well. So when Exodus collapsed, it was terrible for PR. It was terribly discouraging because activists and others were going to use that to say, you see, nobody ever changes. However, it was positive that collapsed because it had lost its purpose. So immediately the Restored Hope Network was raised up, restoredhopenetwork.org, with many of the leading organizations that have been part of Exodus for years are now part of Restored Hope. There's an Overcomers Network with testimonies of many, especially Black Christians who have been transformed. And that is thriving. And many of these are growing. So again, that lead-in question about Exodus, nothing insincere. It's a great question. It's a great question. But I just want to make clear that the collapse of Exodus is not an indictment on, quote, reparative therapy. All right, clip number two, where Russell Moore gives his response.
Reparative therapy is one of those terms that is such an umbrella term. It can mean almost anything. It can mean anything in some people's minds, from the person who sits down and helps somebody walk through what does it mean to follow Christ and to be a disciple of Christ. If that's what you mean is counseling, then yeah, we ought to have that and have more of it. What some people don't mean when they say reparative therapy is this sort of psychotherapeutic model where the end goal is to see to it that the person is free from, or at least substantially free from, same-sex attractions and is now straight.
All right. Now, again, that is a clip from a longer comment. Two things on that. Number one, he's all for counseling, and reparative therapy is basically counseling. All right? That's the first thing. The second thing, I agree, gospel first. People come to know Jesus rightly and walk with him, and they may get free of those sinful temptations or wrong desires, or they may not, but they still follow the Lord nonetheless. That's the requirement for all of us. However, I think it's important to recognize that there are many people who do not want the attractions and think that there is a root to them, and that through psychological counseling, they can get to the root of those and resolve or lessen them. What's wrong with that? As long as we don't give people false hope. All right, one more comment, clip number three.
The problem with that is I think that can easily become a substitute for the gospel, which never promises anybody freedom from temptation. What the gospel promises us is the Holy Spirit to give us the power to walk through temptation faithfully.
Yeah, I affirm that totally. But let's remember, a lot of the people involved in reparative therapy, counselors, professionals, are not doing this from a religious perspective, but simply as counselors, serving people. So let's just remember that, and let's not discount that. The other thing is, if I live my entire life plagued by heterosexual lustful thoughts, something's wrong in my walk with God, because for sure I should be able to walk in purity and temptation be the exception to the rule. Just another comment. Hopefully we can dialogue with Russell Moore about this right here on the broadcast. Friends, go to the website, askdrbrown.org. An important announcement about a great resource package that is so totally relevant. You don't want to miss it right there at askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, it is election day. Vote righteously. vote for candidates that you believe will stand for the key issues of our society so you can look God in the face and say, I voted rightly. Well, it is election day, and I want to encourage you, your vote makes a difference. This is not something we sit out. I'll tell you why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what really bugs me? I don't know any way around it right now, given the political climate and the way we do things in America. But you know what really bugs me is the amount of money that is spent on advertising for candidates. And if I'm going to spend more and you're running against me, then you have to spend more. If you spend more, then I have to spend more. I cannot believe how many ads are running nonstop in close races. The race in North Carolina between Tom Tillis and Kay Hagan, the amount of money being spent. And I think of where that money could go, or other purposes, or how that money could go to the gospel. Or, boy, so many, help the poor. I mean, so many other things. And yet, it's one candidate's going to spend, the other's going to spend, and they're going to keep raising money. And anyway, just sharing my heart. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. It is election day. Since the show's over, I head over to a voting place myself. And as I mentioned the first hour, I have to confess that before this, I do not remember looking at specific candidates for judgeships and then finding out who they were and voting. I would vote, let's say it's a presidential election, for president and then maybe for a congressman. Every so often, if I had read and was convinced that one party, in terms of the local officials, stood for the issues I stood for, then I would vote accordingly, although I'm not registered as either Democrat or Republican. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not. But I would sometimes vote just accordingly for one party. Key issues to me in terms of pro-life and pro-marriage and family, which means opposing, redefining marriage and standing with Israel. That's put me in the Republican column for some time, but often reluctantly, and sometimes where I really can't vote because I don't trust the candidates, and I absolutely oppose the platform of the Democrats on so many issues. But I, for the first time, as I've watched what's happened with judges, with activist judges overturning the will of the people, with activist judges reading things into the Constitution that were never there, with activist judges making bizarre statements. One judge, Supreme Court judge in one state, made the statement that homosexuals can procreate. No one's saying they can't have a family with other help or other means, but they cannot, as a couple, procreate. That's what the word means. You know, I've read some of the opinions from Supreme Court in different states and thought, what in the world? What are they talking about? I mean, arguments that are raised, this is so vacuous. What are so empty? What are they talking about? Because of that, I've read about different judges from my state, and when I go to vote, I'm bringing the list in with me to vote for those judges that stand for values I stand for. It doesn't mean they're going to deliver when they're elected, but at least we make an effort. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me put out a couple of questions for discussion. Whatever we do is kingdom-based. Whatever we do is gospel-based. I'm not politically based, as I've said before. This is not a conservative political talk show. We do talk about social issues. We do talk about issues in other parts of the world because we live in this world and because we're called to bring light to this world. We're called to be the moral conscience of society. And here in America, we get to vote. Biblical days, New Testament days, there wasn't an opportunity to vote. If there had been, the New Testament would have addressed issues a certain way. Much of the world in world history, with kings and rulers and tyrants and others, there has not been an opportunity to vote. We have an opportunity to vote, but I'm not putting my trust in a political party. Question for you. Under any circumstances, could you vote? Could you justify voting for a pro-abortion candidate? Under any circumstances, could you justify voting for a candidate who wanted to redefine marriage? Under any circumstance, could you justify voting for a candidate who is anti-Israel? 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We are going to talk about Election Day and voting. I'm also going to speak with author Larry Sparks about his new book on breakthrough faith. Hey, whatever the situation is in society surrounding us, being people of faith is absolutely essential. A couple things before we speak with Larry. One, did want to clarify that at the Southern Baptist Convention conference dealing with homosexuality, the gospel, and the future of marriage, that they had speakers like Rosaria Butterfield, who is a former lesbian, now married to her pastor husband. They had Christopher Yuan, who has come out of homosexual practice and is celibate, but who would say that he's still same-sex attracted, but denies that desire to follow Jesus. They had Sam Alberry, a pastor from England, with a similar testimony to Christopher in terms of how he lives today celibate. And then Mike Gecky, who is former homosexual, now happily married to a woman. So there was an ample representation of those positions. Before we join my guest, Larry Sparks, I just want to take one election-related call. Susan in Charlotte, could you justify voting for a candidate who is pro-homosexual marriage, who is pro-abortion, pro-Israel, any of those? Could you give any justification for ever voting for such a candidate?
I think that that's a very hard question, and I actually really considered it today. And I think that you could. It was very difficult for me, but I think that when you look at both parties and what their platforms are, you know, the Republicans being mostly verbal about, you know, pro-life and, you know, and pro, you know, marriage, traditional marriage, and then the Democrats being just the opposite. But each party, if you really look further into it, they all have very specific things that they, you know, talk about that don't have to do with that. And it's hard, but I think that, you know, for me, I have to put it all into God's hands, knowing that He's sovereign and, you know, just trying to make the best decision overall. Yeah. You know, if you're voting for somebody that specifically just says, you know, they're pro-life, which I am, but, you know, a lot of other things just don't make sense for, you know, the world or for the government or, you know, other things. I think that those are things that you have to take into consideration as well, but it's so hard.
Yeah, you know, and Susan, especially when we realize that many parties, you know, that they have their platform and they don't deliver. I will say that President Obama has tragically delivered on his radically pro-abortion, radically pro-redefining marriage stances and has been very shaky on Israel. I may have, I don't know if I said the Israel part earlier, but for me, the non-negotiables, I cannot under any circumstances vote for a candidate who is not pro-life. Doesn't matter how good they are on other issues. To me, I have blood on my hands if I do that. I cannot vote under any circumstances for a candidate who supports redefining marriage because of the importance of marriage and family. And I cannot vote for a candidate that is anti-Israel. So I might have to sit out an election. I don't put my trust in a party, but in terms of my job as voting, that's a non-negotiable. That's my own conviction. But thank you, Susan, for the call. I appreciate it. All right, we're going to come back to the elections in a little while, but let's talk faith, because whoever's elected, we need faith, and we need faith that breaks through. And that's the topic of Larry Sparks' new book. Hey, Larry, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it is. It is a joy to have you. Larry is host of the weekly radio broadcast, Voice of Destiny, and he currently serves as Director of Curriculum Resources for Destiny Image Publishers. And his new book, Breakthrough Faith, Larry, there are lots of books that have been written on faith over the years. What makes your book different? What inspired you to write it?
You know, that was the challenge that I had when I felt like the Lord put the message on my heart. I really had a conversation with him saying, God, have I got the message right? Because there's so many people who have come before me who have written on faith. But ultimately, what caused me to write this book is my journey. I mean, for 7 years or so, I was in what you call a hyper-faith church. I mean, you have hyper-grace. I think in some context, you can have hyper-faith. I mean, it was a word of faith, prosperity, name it. And the reality is some of those principles are biblical, some are correct, but it really took it to a very imbalanced extreme. And, you know, due to circumstances, we ended up leaving the church. And for the next, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, I went to the other extreme. So I was in hyper faith. And then I went to a lot of different churches that had fantastic theology of the cross and of Christ and the blood and redemption. But faith was something, as far as miracles or healing or any kind of breakthrough in this life, there wasn't a focus on that. It was more focused on what we'll get when we get to the other side, when we get to heaven. So I saw these two extremes of the faith spectrum, but something inside of me knew that there was more. And I guess what ultimately was the catalyst for writing the book, I was in Mark 2, and you have the story of the paralytic who gets lowered through the ceiling. So, you know, and we all celebrate what happened. He got healed. Sins were pronounced as forgiven. There was great, you know, Jesus was recognized as the one who did that. We focus on that. But what gripped my heart was the fact that these four friends brought their friend, their paralyzed friend, to Jesus. They couldn't get in. There was this opposition. Couldn't get into the house where Jesus was speaking. And instead of, like, going back home and changing their theology, thinking, oh, I guess we can't get to Jesus, so he doesn't want to heal our friend, to actually climb up to the top of the house and break through. And it just so gripped me because I thought to myself, you know what, I wonder sometimes what we think is the will of God, you know, when we don't get something or when, you know, the healing doesn't come or, you know, when we're going through circumstances or opposition, we tend to label those things, well, I guess this sickness might be God's will or this might be God's will. And maybe sometimes God's will is actually on the other side of perseverance where we press through and with tenacity and courage. We know what the Word of God says, we know what Jesus did, and we actually press through, hang in there, and actually break through to experience what he promised. So yeah, that was really a catalyst that caused me to write the book, that passage.
So in other words, we can talk about faith, we can talk about having faith, we can talk about depending on God to get us through difficult circumstances, we can talk about crying out to him for others and exercising our faith for others, but ultimately, it's a faith that perseveres, that is the faith that breaks through. What are keys to the book? Obviously, folks need to read the book to get the full message. But how do I break through? What do I need to do to have faith that breaks through?
I'll just give a couple of them because they're very practical things I've used in my own life. Again, the last thing I want to do in this book, there are definitely keys and there are definitely principles. But the book starts and is grounded and rooted in the knowledge of God, in the character of God. You know, one of the great things the Lord taught me in this whole process of studying faith is, you know, faith comes from our intimacy with God. And sometimes we don't think about that. I mean, Dr. Brown, I often hear you, and I'm so grateful for your voice on this matter because you take a very unashamed, unapologetic stand when it comes to things. You know, like healing, like the miraculous. It's not a name it, claim it thing, but there are certain things the Bible does indeed promise, and there are things that we've got to stand on. And, you know, that's one of those things. It's like there are keys and there are principles, but it all comes down to knowing who God is, the knowledge of God, and that's what I root the book in. So, but that's the foundation. Some of the practical things are testimony, exposing yourself to testimony, feeding on the works of God, what he's done. When I'm going through a dry spell or when I'm up against something and I need to have my faith stirred up and strengthened, what I will do, I'll go to the Bible. I'll go to history books. I'll go to legitimate YouTube videos or church service. I will connect myself with stories and testimonies of what God is actually doing, whether it's a healing, whether it's a miracle, whether it's a deliverance. Because when I hear what God has done, it strengthens my faith because what God has done, he will do again. He can do again. He's faithful. So testimony. Another thing, and these are all at the end of the book, I just provide some practical things, is who you keep company with. That's a huge thing. I know Peter uses this phrase, people of like precious faith. And I'm very intentional from your spouse to your friends to those people in just close proximity to you. I want to have people who actually build my faith, encourage my faith. When I feel faithless, and I've had times where, you know, here I am writing a book on breakthrough faith, but I got to be honest and authentic. There are times where I was a job situation or a health situation, I felt pretty pressed. I felt like, oh my goodness, this seems like a hopeless situation. But the Lord put a woman in my life, my wife, to actually remind me of who God is and of His promises and of places in His Word. And, you know, I seek to do that for her. I seek to do that for my family and for my friends. But I tell you, there are times where I get pressed, and I'm grateful I have people in my life who speak that and remind me of God's faithfulness.
All right, let me jump in. I got a couple more questions I want to ask you. Friends, we need faith in God during this election season. Go to Equip Culture, equipculture.com, for Larry's website.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. A little later in the broadcast, we will have some lively discussion about the elections. In fact, if you want to get on the line now, and then we'll talk to you in a few minutes, could you justify, could you give me any reason that you would vote for a candidate who is pro-abortion? Could you give me any reason that you would vote for a candidate who stood for redefining marriage? And I'm talking to those in particular who consider themselves born-again Christians and followers of Jesus and adhering to the Word. Could you give me any reason why you would vote for a candidate who was pro-abortion or stood for redefining marriage or who was anti-Israel? Those are non-negotiables to me, but I want to hear from you. Also, do you have trust in either party to deliver what they promise? 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Larry Sparks, author of the new book, Breakthrough Faith. Larry, is doubt paralyzing? Is doubt more than just, you know, sometimes I struggle with doubt. If you're uncertain about the will of God or the ways of God, can that be paralyzing?
Absolutely, it can. Absolutely, Dr. Brown. And you know, here's the reality. There is mystery to God. God is God. God is sovereign. God is much bigger than our ability to wrap our minds around. I don't ever want to box God or put him into a formula. And I feel like sometimes when we talk about faith, it does. It turns God into a principle. It turns him into a formula, almost an impersonal force that we use, almost like a genie in the lamp. We use the faith formula and get what we want from God. So He's not that. There is mystery to him. But I do believe when we know who God is, when we look at the model of Jesus, just like in the example I use in Mark 2 with these guys who press through, break through the ceiling, and Jesus heals their friend, I believe when we see the example of Jesus and we know the character and the ways and the nature of God, those are things, those are clear, those are revealed, and I believe those are things that we can actually stand on even when the world is just kind of in turmoil around us. We need hope. We need something we can anchor on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Larry. We've got one more question. Folks may be listening, and right now their own lives are blessed. They're doing well. Their family's well. They're healthy. Their job's okay. Everything's fine. And even, you know, their immediate circle of friends, there don't seem to be a lot of crises and things like that. And yet, America's in a messed up state. And no one could argue that. No one who's thinking clearly could argue that. Will reading a book like Breakthrough Faith just help people to have more of a faith outlook in general and more confidence in God, even when the society is so messed up?
Absolutely. You know, Maha, I love Isaiah 60, where we see that the world, the earth, there's this contrast. There's deep darkness upon the earth and its people. But then right next to it, it talks about the glory of the Lord arising and shining upon his people. And, you know, I don't want to draw prophetic inference from that if there's none. That all I see is an illustration and an example. There's deep darkness in the earth right now. We can't deny that, absolutely. but I want us to be a people that each one of us filled with the Holy Spirit, that we would arise and we would shine and we'd actually represent Jesus in the earth, because that's to me what breakthrough faith is about, more than a formula or a principle. When we are close with God, when we know Him in that intimate relationship, I think intimacy ultimately produces imitation. People yeah. imitate God, and to me, that might be that's the definition of faith that I came from this whole writing journey out of. God, faith is really just talking like you, responding to situations and circumstances like you, not like what we want. Not, God, give me my answer my way right away. God, what would you say? How do you think? And what would you do? And us modeling that.
Yeah, that, Larry, that is really well said. And it reminds us that faith is not some abstraction, but faith is a concrete aspect of our personal relationship with God. Larry's website, Equip Culture, of course, one word, equipculture.com, his new book, which I really encourage you to get hold of, Breakthrough Faith, the author, Larry Sparks. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. And actually, the website, equipculture.com, is nothing at the moment. It would be mybreakthroughfaith.com. And you can see a free chapter from the book, and then I also have a free Advent devotional I'm giving away. But yeah, mybreakthroughfaith.com.
All right, go there, friends, mybreakthroughfaith.com. Get a free chapter from the book, get the Advent calendar. Awesome. Thank you, Larry. God bless you. All right, friends, when I scheduled the interview with Larry, I was just looking at, okay, this, when our producer scheduled and I okayed it, I was just looking, okay, this Tuesday will work, not even realizing it was Election Day, but I'm really pleased to have this discussion on Election Day because it reminds us that we do vote. And it is a responsibility we have and a privilege we have, but our trust is not in the government. Our trust is in God. I have voted largely Republican because of key issues to me for some years now, but often with reluctance, sometimes not even able to vote with good conscience because of the political establishment, which both parties have, which seems to just be bent on staying in power. That's one reason I think term limits make sense. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones with Mac in Raleigh, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi there. Thanks for the opportunity to talk. I think it's difficult to take absolute stands on almost any of these things because, for instance, I'm not for abortion. But if somebody, if there's incest or if there's rape, it seems like to me there are possible extenuating circumstances. But, you know, as a form of birth control, obviously not. You know, people shouldn't, they should be responsible. I tend to agree with what you're saying. I'm so disappointed. I've been a Republican for years because of being conservative. But frankly, if I could pick a ticket that says fire everybody, I would like to do that. You know, and basically give everybody a fresh chance because they get up there and they forget, in my opinion, why they went there and the people that put them in the office.
Many do, Mac. You're right. Many do disappoint. And obviously the abortion issue, the rape incest question, I still believe abortion remains wrong. But of course, it's a tremendously sensitive, difficult issue and question. But that's such a tiny. Tell you what, stay right there. All right. I've got a break. Stay right there, Mac. We'll get back to you. Travis Mell, you're next. So stay right with us. 866-34-TRUTH to join us. Friends, I just got word today that our most significant donor that helps us in so many ways is going through a really tough time right now with his company and needs prayer and is not able to help as he normally would. We depend on God, not on any individual, but perhaps you've been wanting your money to count and go in a direction where it would really count. Why not join us? Your one-time gift or your monthly support would go a long way in helping meet this immediate need that has come up with word that we got from this donor yesterday. Of course, we're praying for him and God's blessing on his work and on his business. But right now, it puts us just under a bit more pressure. Perhaps the Lord's speaking to you to help, and if enough of you do, it meets the shortfall. Give us a call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. 888-278-9978 with your one-time gift, or go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click donate.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So what about term limits? What about term limits? Should our elected officials, Congress, should they have term limits? House of Representatives, Senate, should they have term limits? This makes sense to me. Certainly makes sense to me. Now look, there are issues I stand for. There are cultural issues I'm focused on. I can speak to with some level of expertise. I am not a political expert, far from it. But it just seems that folks can get entrenched for decades, and some are worthy of long-term service. But it seems to me you get this power mongering, and you have in both parties an establishment that's going to resist change, and that's going to resist anything that takes it out of power. And that needs to change. 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome to the Line of Fire on this election day. All right, Mac, just back to you quickly. There was one more point you wanted to make.
Is it Mac?
Yes, it is.
All right, yeah. All right, thanks. I just want to make sure. One more point that I wanted to make was, I don't know how people can sit out and not vote when they look at what happened in America during Obama's administration, because, you know, we don't even have a family like what we used to. You know, we don't even have the same, you know, I live in North Carolina, and we just passed that it's okay to marry gay and lesbians. And I just can't imagine.
We didn't pass that, sir. We voted against it, and an activist judge overturned
it.
And the Supreme Court, we voted 61% to 39% to uphold marriage, and it was overturned by activist judges, and the Supreme Court declined to weigh in on it. And in point of fact, someone could say, well, why should I vote? Now let's carefully vote for judges. Mac, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. I said this earlier, and I apologize to judges and others that I have not previously done the research or looked at the voting guides and then come in with a list to know which judge to vote for. Sometimes I've known in a blanket way where I'm voting. But the more I appreciate the power of these judges, for good or for bad, I am going with a list as soon as the show's over, heading over to vote with a list. And in that list is just the judges that I'm voting for, because what is it, maybe eight of them that are up for election, whatever the number is. And I want to vote righteously and do my part. Having said that, I'm not putting my trust in the government or in a party. I'm putting my trust in God and ultimately looking to God's people to make a difference. But this is part of what we do. It's not the major part of what we do, but it is an important part of what we do. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Mel in Arlington, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You had asked about voting for a party, or do you vote for or against an individual based on whether they support or abortion?
Yes, but specifically I ask, could you give any justification as a follower of Jesus for voting for a pro-abortion candidate or a pro-homosexual marriage candidate or an anti-Israel candidate? Could you give any justification for that? That was specific. So your thoughts on that?
Not one bit. Compromise. The Lord, there's no compromise in God's word. Sin is sin. Those are two overt sins. That being said, the church has ignored the responsibility in terms of sexual sin, the heterosexual sin that's been going on in the body, and the body has refused to act as Paul has directed in 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
Yep.
So we've absolutely.
We have had rampant no fault divorce. We have had rampant pornography. We've had rampant immorality among our young people and singles. And the first reason marriage is in trouble in America is because of the sins of the church. Yes, sir.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to encourage you to make the issues the issues. When we're going to vote, race is not an issue. When we're going to vote, the issues are the issues. When we're going to vote, the real question is not what the ads say on TV. But look, I live in North Carolina now, and I don't watch much TV, but I'll watch some sports here and there, sometimes do some writing and then have some sports on in the background. And every other second there's an ad for Kay Hagan and then for Tom Tillis. And then for Tom Tillis and then for Kay Hagan. I go on YouTube to look for some videos and there the ads pop up, first for her, then for him, first for him, then for her. And it's just so much money being spent. Oh, I'm voting. And I'm voting for Tom Tillis based on some of the key issues that are important to me. But I hate the fact that so much money has to be spent. Wow. So many other purposes to use that money for. Now, one of the issues just came up, and I've got three callers right now from North Carolina. So stay right there in High Point, in Winston-Salem, and Wake Forest. I want to get to you in a moment. But we voted 61% to 39%. As I mentioned a moment ago, we voted to uphold marriage as a union of a man and woman for many, many reasons. We voted for that 2 years ago. That was now overturned by an activist judge. This is a discussion on Chris Wallace, actually on Fox News Sunday, hosted by Chris Wallace, and attorney Ted Olson, who used to be a pro-family marriage guy who's now a pro-gay activist. And Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council is obviously a strong ally for marriage. They're discussing these issues, and Chris Wallace raises the issue about judges. This is clip number 5, Chris Wallace and then Ted Olson.
Why should judges overrule the demonstrated will of the people either through referenda or through state legislative action?
We have a constitution and a bill of rights precisely because we want protections from majority rule. When the majority in a legislature or a popular vote take away rights of individuals that are protected by the Bill of Rights, then we have an independent judiciary to rectify that situation. It's happened again and again and again throughout this country's history. We have an independent judiciary to protect the rights of individuals like gay and lesbian citizens who only want respect, decency, and equality along with the rest of us.
There is no constitutional right for two men or two women to, quote, marry, any more than there's a constitutional right for two adult brothers to marry. It is not there, nor is it in the Bill of Rights. That is a fiction. That is a legal fiction. Let me just continue for a moment, then I'll go to the phones. Again, Ted Olson, Tony Perkins, debating, discussing the issue of redefining marriage. Clip number 6.
I think the analogy would be to the 1967 decision of the United States Supreme Court that struck down bans on interracial marriage. We now understand, and the American public believes, that that was a right decision and that's right for America. Over 59% of Americans now believe that marriage equality should be the law of the land. Individuals should be allowed to get married to the person that they love.
Oh, hang on. He just said that we have an independent judiciary to overrule the rule of the majority. So what does it matter what the people think? The people voted and said how they thought, and state after state after state, and the vast majority of those states, they still feel the same about these issues. So why quote a poll saying 59%? And by the way, there are other polls that say it's much more equally divided. Plus, what do the polls tell you except people are also influenced heavily by media? Polls also tell us that most Americans think 1 in 4 people identify as gay or lesbian, and young people think it's about 1 in 3, whereas it's less than 1 in 60. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the media skews things and people's opinions are not always based on rational conclusion. But either way, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that the independent judiciary is here to overrule the vote and the will of the majority if it allegedly conflicts with some activist judge's interpretation of the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. You can't have that and now turn around and say, oh, yeah, but the majority of the people want to redefine marriage. Let's also go a little further here. To compare laws against interracial marriage with laws against two men or two women, quote, marrying is to compare literally apples with oranges. A black man or a white man or a Hispanic man or an Asian man is a man. And a black woman, a white woman, an Asian woman, Hispanic woman is a woman. And those two, the man and the woman, have the essential components needed for marriage and for the potential of having a family and joining the family to a mom and dad, joining the kids to a mom and dad. Two men or two women don't have those components. It is a complete hijacking of the civil rights movement to say that gay is the new black. Discussion continues. Clip number 7. Now Ted Olson and Tony Perkins.
What's the purpose of marriage? The purpose of marriage is what the Supreme Court has said 14 times. It's a fundamental right that involves privacy, association, liberty, and being with the person that you love and forming a part of our community and being treated equally with the rest of society.
First off, is that marriage is not to affirm adults, it's for the protection of children. And if love is the only factor, where do you draw the boundaries?
Exactly. Notice Ted Olson, brilliant attorney, did not answer the question, what is the purpose of marriage? He did not answer that in his initial response. Last clip, I believe Tony Perkins raises valid points. I saw folks watch the debate or saw responses and they were disappointed in both parties. But in point of fact, the points that Tony Perkins is raising here are worthy points. Clip number 8.
We know from the social science that children do best with a mom and a dad. That's why our policies in this country have preferred marriage and given benefits to it. But let me, if love is the factor, what boundaries are there?
You want the sky to fall because two people that are living next door to you, what court after court after court has said that allowing people of the same sex to marry the person that they love and be a part of our community and to be treated equally does no damage to heterosexual marriage. And it does, and what the courts, court after court after court has said that children living in a same-sex relationship do as well or better than people in other communities.
The court doesn't study this social fact.
The court
heard evidence. Let me ask you, what are the boundaries, though? If it's just love, what are the boundaries? Where can we go with marriage? If
what are you suggesting? That they're going to be polygamy? That people will be marrying their pets?
Of course Tony Perkins is right. We're already there. Look at TV. The media is ahead on these things. Look at TV. Big Love, Sister Wives, My Five Wives. These shows about polygamy, married and dating. That's about polyamory. Woman marrying herself and on and on. Why? Because once marriage is fundamentally redefined, it can mean anything. Already a court in Utah has struck down one aspect of anti-polygamy laws there. Why not? And look, Time Magazine for some years has been asking, should incest be legal? And the media is all over promoting this in different series and movies. And so here, let me help you with this. The resource that we have, I'm going to mention this and I'm going right to the phones, okay? The resource that we have this week is something that you can't avoid because these issues are knocking on our door. How do we respond? I want to help you. I want to equip you. I did a debate in 2008. We booked the Booth Playhouse in the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. And I debated Harry Knox, a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian. It's a two-hour DVD. It will model how to address these issues with sensitivity and truth, with grace and truth together, with compassion and courage together. And you'll also see how Harry Knox presents his points. And you'll see what is argued in his point. We had equal amount of tickets for the 350-400 seats. We divided them between ourselves so that there'd be a representation from each side. And with that, we have a resource. It's limited availability. It's not hype. Normally we have as much stock of anything we need. But a ministry worked with us to produce a mini version of my 700-page book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's a beautiful paperback called The Stealth Agenda. It takes four of the key chapters in condensed form from my book. We only have a limited number of these. When you buy the DVD, we will give you the book for free and we'll pay the postage. So call today. This genuinely is a limited time offer because our supplies are limited and we're not doing a reprint of A Stealth Agenda right now. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or right from the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of this. You'll be blessed. And these are issues we must have understanding on, and we must be filled with the love of God while we stand for truth. All right, I've got a break. I don't want to cut anyone off. So, Travis, you're next, and then I'm going straight to Ann and Leslie. We're going to stay in North Carolina for a few more minutes, and then hopefully you're voting. Make sure you know what judges to vote for. You realize the important role they play. Vote, and then encourage your elected officials to do what's right, and then realize they only play a limited role. The ultimate role is going to come down to God's people making a difference in society. By God's grace, through the gospel, by the power of the Spirit, we can see radical change come, beginning with individuals and then spreading through the nation.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, straight to the phones on this election day, 866-34-TRUTH. Travis in High Point, North Carolina, thanks so much for holding. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
No problem. You're so on point, Michael. You handle the marriage issue so well. I wish you had some kind of platform with guys like you and Speculo when the nominations come up, because you ask if under any circumstances will we have a gay marriage candidate, will we vote for gay marriage or a pro-choice candidate, and that's what every Republican did at the last national, the presidential. We voted a guy who was pro-choice when he was governor, who had gay marriage, was the first to have gay marriage and mandatory health care, and we need a Christian, ever since the Tea Party and Fox News, which everybody thinks is so great, we haven't won an election since, presidential election.
And yeah,
we need some kind of Christian, these are the guys that believe what they say. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the key thing is getting someone to act on what they say their convictions are once they're elected. Look, black voters are often taken advantage of by the Democratic Party. Okay, we're going to get your vote. And then what do they actually do to bring about positive change for the black community? And then white evangelicals are really taken advantage of by the Republican Party. Okay, we're going to get your vote because we're your only alternative. And then they just kind of maintain their power. Hey, Travis, let me ask you one thing, and I appreciate your support. As someone standing with our ministry, how does that... When you vote, there's some frustration. But if someone's standing with that ministry, what kind of outlet does that give you?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
For example, you're not voting for me in political office, and God's not calling me to run for political office, which I think
I was saying was how everybody listens to people like Ann Coulter, who, you and people like you and Secular, there needs to be a Christian party that's not a third party.
Got
just
it.
Some like how the Tea Party is and how like O'Reilly is, where they say, they look at everything so tactical. Well, we know he has all this bad stuff, but the Democrats will love that, so he will win. That's what we were told with him and McCain, and ever since.
Rights
is a great issue. Depends on the issue.
I understand you, Travis. And again, yeah. It's the political establishment that is such a major issue. The political establishment. That's why I think there should be term limits, so that it's harder to have the establishment when there are more people cycling through. And I believe that voters would lean, if there was a strong stand for the moral issues the right way, and then someone had their head screwed on right with economy and defense, how could you not vote for that candidate in terms of overwhelming numbers of those who identify as moral conservatives? And friends, as you stand with us, no, you can't vote for me. to run because I'm not a candidate, and I thank God I'm not a candidate, and the nation can thank God that I'm not a candidate because that's not my calling, and there are a ton of people that'll do what they do a whole lot better than me. But you can vote for me as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. You can vote for me and say, hey, we believe in what you're doing. Pray for me. Pray for the expansion of the work that we're doing that will touch more and more people. And pray with me for support, for increase in every way, not for any of our pockets, but to put right back out to expand the ministry work we are doing. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Anne in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you so very much. I was sitting here saying amen, amen, listening to you about the term limits. Historically speaking, our forefathers never intended service, and it is service, in our Congress, in our House of Representatives, and even as our president, to be a career. It was just to be a part-time job, basically. They didn't meet all year long, and it has changed over the years. But term limits, without having term limits, what we've seen is special interest groups building alliances with our congressmen and with our senators, and we've seen a lot of legislation passed that with term limits never would have passed. But I can see an activist judge probably having some effect on that, too, and overturning the will of the people. We were based on, from the very beginning, the will of the people.
Yep.
And our activist judges, even as high as our Supreme Court, all the way down to our local court, are overturning the will of the people when they, in fact, work for us.
I'm saying amen to everything you're saying, and well said. And again, how do we address these things? That's another question. There can be frustration. What we need to do is do our best to be people of faith in the midst of taking action. But Anne, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Leslie in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thanks for having my call. My first time.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. In response to your question, as a Christian, if we're voting to be salt and light in the community, then there is no way that I could vote for anyone who were, in favor of gay marriages and abortions or that didn't stand with Israel. So that's the answer to that question. But I wanted to disagree with you about how important it is to go in there with a list of the judges, but it's really hard to know what the judges stand for. They're not as forthcoming. It's harder to find that information. You have to really dig and research. But and then I also wanted to say, as important as that is, it's also, I believe, important that we get involved in the primaries, because when I was growing up, my parents always put into me that your voice does. I wasn't raised Christian, and they thought they never voted because they thought that, it didn't make a difference.
Yep.
But I've come to believe otherwise, obviously. But I always still have that feeling that it doesn't make that big of a difference because you don't get to choose who you're voting for in the first place. But with
right,
the primaries,
but
you do have more of a say. You can have something.
You have more choice there. And look, for those who say it doesn't make a difference, look at what's happened. Under President Obama, for me, these are tremendous negatives. What he's done with abortion, being so pro-abortion activist and standing with Planned Parenthood, what he's done, not just in America, but putting pressure on other countries to embrace gay activist agenda. And then with a weak stance for Israel, with Obamacare. So he's elected, and to me, a lot of negative things happened. I'm not putting my trust in the government, but we've seen bad happen. Obviously, other presidents have failed in different ways. Let's do what we can. Let's do our job in voting responsibly. And by the way, you can go to conservative family organizations, and they'll give you lists of recommended judges. All right, friends, we're out of time. We'll have some post-election reflections tomorrow, and I know more of you wanted to weigh in. Perhaps we'll be able to take some calls as well. Remember to take advantage of a very relevant special offer at AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today. Yes, we vote. It is a privilege and responsibility, but we do not put our trust in either party. or in the government to do the work of God.